don't spill on my microphone.
Well, we have shots today.
We have concentrated alcohol.
Because we have far more people.
We have a high concentration of people.
That's right.
And some are enjoying it more than others.
Yeah.
Apparently I'm Jake. Take shots.
And I'm Mako.
And we have a slew of people here on RPG Afterglow, where the dice get rolled and the story gets told and we ponder the significance.
We brought almost all the players.
We relocated all
except
the players,
for the
players
end.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And he's the mystery that comes at the end.
Yes.
All talk crap about him.
He will reveal himself from behind the curtain once the saga has been told.
Does he listen to us?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he listens to him, absolutely.
Yeah, he likes to get the rock cut for next week so we can actually hear and adjust accordingly.
Get some insight.
Indeed.
Well, it's an exciting week for me because I get to hear what happened when I was gone right now.
And that's part of what the addition of this expanded cast is for.
Right.
Because I didn't think you were going to be here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I wouldn't miss it. Screw work.
I walked from Colorado.
So right now, Violet is in limbo. In
liquid form.
Liquid form. I really think I'm in one of the elemental planes. There's a lot of clues to point that I'm there. But, right. Yeah,
but from our point of view.
As far as we know, you're liquid.
I went liquid.
Right.
Right in front of the god of elements, so...
Kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, I think...
I don't think you
I think
knew
Tobias
it was...
could put it together.
Maybe. Now, before we get to talking about other players like they're not here...
Let's do introductions.
Let's go around the table.
All right, let's do it.
Speaking of Tobias...
There he is.
I'm Schlegel, also known as Steve, and I play Tobias.
What's your gaming background in a nutshell?
Oh, wow. D&D old school from probably... third grade, and then hit or miss up until a little bit of version 3, then 3.5, a lot of 3.5, and now Pathfinder. We wisely,
Did we do a little of third edition before it went to 3.5?
Yeah, there was a book.
There was a monster manual, I think, at least.
We wisely avoided D&D 4.0.
Yeah.
I think just glancing at the rule books made my head hurt. And
there were no gnomes.
And one of the things to know is the person who introduced him to D&D
was Mako.
Me.
Oh, nice.
Right. Yeah.
Because you guys have known each other for how long?
Since
birth.
First grade. It was first grade, yeah. Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
And now we have a new addition, not only to the table, obviously, but to the gaming table. We were talking about you a little bit ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Megan's sister, Megan, who plays Magnus, her sister's coming into town, and she arrived, and she's here, and she got a character rolled up.
Yes.
So, Nicole, tell us about who you are.
Well, I'd like to point out that I'm actually pre-Megan.
It's true.
In D&D with these guys.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm Nicole. Otherwise, I guess... Known to the guys as Baker.
Yeah.
Even though I'm no longer a baker. Yeah.
Only Magnuses.
I have been playing D&D for, I guess, I mean, with the gap of a year and a half, I played for about a year with you guys before that.
Right.
But my history was I worked with these guys back in the day.
Part of the Caribou crew.
At the Boo.
Yeah, coffee shop.
And, you know, we always heard stories about D&D on Sunday nights, and I was like, I want to see this. And so, like, in college, I ended up doing a creative person paper on Mr. Wiley over here. And sat in on a session of D&D with the guys. I think this was back at your house, Schlegel.
It sure was.
It was back up front.
Yeah. And sat at the counter while they were all at the table and watched them for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And
I remember after like 45 riveted. Minutes, because you were sitting kind of out of my peripheral anyway.
Yeah.
And I tried to like as nonchalantly as I could just kind of look over my shoulder because I thought, Kyle, she's super bored. Is she looking at us like, what's going on? I look over and you just have this look of like complete enthrallment. Just like, okay, good. All right, awesome, sweet.
Absolutely loved it.
Not like, what in the world?
Then for about 6 years after that, tried to talk the guys into letting me play with them.
We absolutely would not have it.
Nope, they would not.
No girls.
Yes, you can't join, the girls our stinky club.
Unless you're stinky.
We were worried.
And I finally got Jake on my side, and he campaigned for me with the group.
And that was another six-year process. No, just kidding.
And they allowed me to come in, so...
There were some wild negotiations in this
whole thing. I think so.
But it was great having you come in. It was awesome.
And now I am the new character in this campaign.
You paved the way for your younger sister, however.
Yes, she did.
Oh, hey, you know, there's one thing, too. I remember that you did play... with another group before us.
Yes.
And that was something that was really...
With her husband's friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because so. I had told him that I really was interested in D&D, so he hooked me up with his friend who played it. And so they taught me a little bit of the basics.
And background research.
Yeah, yeah. And now I play Taro, who is a halfling ranger.
And who's crabby.
Yeah, a little bit crabby.
And has a thing against orcs.
What a dick.
Even quarter orcs.
His favorite enemy is orcs and goblins.
Okay. Well, we have a common ground then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know.
Nobody likes goblins.
Not even goblins.
No.
Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Mockmerge.
So yeah, as you know, Mako classically likes to ignore my transitions.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole paved the way for Megan to later in the chronology of this whole thing to join the table.
Yes. Yes, she did. So I am Megan Magnuson, and my character's name is Magnus Ver Magnuson. As my sister alluded to, we are bakers. It was both of our maiden name. I recently got married and became a Magnuson. Thus, I am Magnus Ver Magnuson, who used to be a baker.
But still bakes from time to time. Thank
still you bakes from time to time. My history started with my sister moving across the country. She moved a year and a half ago, though she's now back. And I remember...
Left a hole in our gaming party.
Yes.
I know, they were sad.
Can you believe she did that to us?
We couldn't argue to get her in, and now that she was leaving, we didn't know what to do.
Oh, man, it was. It was just like, oh, no.
She had forged a path that we had grown to need.
So
who could replace her?
Well, I think part of it was I was just, even throughout that entire year, I was still just enthralled with it. Like, every day I'm just like, what are we going to do next?
And so hearing all these stories, I also have known these guys forever from back in Caribou days. And I, being the youngest of the group, met everyone when I was probably about 16 years old, I think.
That is crazy.
Now she's 45.
Yes, 45. And I had always known about D&D and the strong adherence to every Sunday, no matter what. I don't care if you have other plans. And I never actually even considered playing because I didn't really know much about it. And then when Nikki started playing, I call her Nikki, she...
And I say, who's that?
Yeah, nobody's Nikki.
Don't call me Nikki. Nikki?
I've known her since my birth. So
I
call her Nikki.
Not mine.
No. And she found out that she was going to be moving and kind of talked to me about it. And my D&D experience, I would say, started in my backyard where yeah. Nikki pulled out the D&D, at that point, 3.5 book and explained all the rules to me in one night.
Wow. Really?
Really?
I didn't know about that.
It was like an epic, like, 3-hour, like, talking about D&D. Like, I was
doing classes. Was that painful? Was it fun?
No, I think it was really fun. I mean,
I didn't
quite...
No wonder you, like, kicked all her ass and all, like, how did she even know that?
Get the point.
But at the same time, it was funny because at the same time, my husband was sitting at the table with one of our good friends, and they were talking fantasy football. And my husband's take on this has always been like, yeah, it's really nerdy, but it's no nerdier than me playing in 4 fantasy football leagues every year.
Every Sunday.
So we have our little separate worlds on Sundays.
Fantasy football is the D&D for jocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So at
not
that
really.
Night,
I don't. I think that's not really apples to apples.
No,
just because of the creative outlet that role playing gives us.
And it's continuity as well, but.
I don't think you've seen how Pete plays fantasy football.
He was nice.
Kind of. No.
But he's not creating worlds. He's not creating characters.
True.
He's not acting out.
No.
But they get to pretend like they own a football team.
That's a good point.
Oh, I own a football team.
Yeah,
and these are my boys.
That's all
like how your trust
is all imaginary.
Say that.
They can imagine they're making lots of money.
Well, as do we. I have 3,000 gold.
Oh, you have 3,000?
But they don't get to buy things. This is a bad thing. They don't get to buy things in fantasy football.
I have 455. They like trade for people.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, they like, it's a whole existence as being a football owner.
Oh.
They have their teams, and then sometimes they have like, it's called the whatever.
It's
called the
matter.
Waiver wire, and they get teams that are on free agent type people.
Oh my
and they
God,
trade
it is.
And,
so kind of building a team.
Yeah.
A team of adventurers.
Well, and
Elemental.
P- Pete spends roughly 14,000 million hours preparing for fantasy football every year.
Just
which
roughly.
I hear roughly. About it. So I actually know way too much. Anyway.
And that, now they got to dress like.
Yeah, they dress up as football players.
Big curly mustaches and stuff.
Love an accent.
That's what football players
don't know.
Oh, the owners.
The owners. Yeah. Because they're all tycoon rich.
There was a guy.
Railroad trained.
We saw this owner. I don't know what game we were watching.
It was on Sunday. And it was the Jacksonville Jaguars. He has like this huge mustache. Handlebar mustache.
Yep, see, that's what all rich men do.
Yeah,
handlebar mustaches.
And that's going to be on my next character.
It's a good look.
Yeah. I'm playing a dwarf. Get ready.
Huge mustache.
Back yeah. to...
Anyway, as that night, after we spent hours and hours listening to the rules, she then took a picture of me standing in my hallway with the 3.5 book that she had purchased for me as a gift, me holding it up and making a super sad face.
Yeah,
I'm like, face, please let me play.
I still have that on my phone.
And sent it to all the guys, knowing that she was leaving. And I don't know, what kind of, did you guys have issues?
I remember Steve's response was,
"No,
what, a pouty face? It's going to take more than that."
Yeah. Rabble, rabble, rabble.
And I wasn't sold by a pouty face.
Yeah.
And I think I remember I told you the advice when we went to the state fair. It was like, just don't say anything at all. We'll just slip you.
I know. I went to the state fair with Jake and Mako that year. And
no.
It was just me.
It was us
three.
Oh,
it was the three of us.
Yeah, I didn't go.
Yeah.
But we went
and
the
I
next
told
year.
You that yeah. three times.
Yeah.
Sorry. I went to the state fair with Mako and Nicole, and... You're like definitely giving me the like, it's okay. I think it's going to work out. We're going to make it happen. But you know, you just can't hassle everybody. And
you can't
like,
be Megan.
I felt like I was like, yeah, in a job interview or right. something. I've known you guys for how long? And I'm like, I
it's
don't
serious
really
negotiations to get to the table.
It is.
But yes, yeah, so I've been playing with you guys for now a year and a half, roughly, maybe a little bit longer. Played through Steve's World and in some Savage Worlds and some modules that we did.
Jake's,
Weeby
Jake's,
Goblins.
Adventure Path.
Jake's the Adventure Path. The Goblins.
The Weeby Goblins, oh, yeah. Which was so fun.
Yeah, pretty hilarious.
Then or the like one Goblins. With the epic map.
Yeah.
That you had.
That I still have in the back room there that I can't bring myself to throw away. It's like 6 feet by 4 feet of cardboard and then little pieces of Velcro. So as you go, you attach the Velcro.
It's amazing.
That was
room
awesome.
And hallways and whatnot.
It's a beautiful dungeon.
But
I mean, it was just
I got to find so people that would be interested in play Pathfinder again. Because it's like, you guys can't play it again. You know, the
bot. We didn't finish.
I could maybe
we
use the template and put it back in there. But
we knew the conclusion.
Oh, yeah. We slipped ahead.
Yeah, we slipped ahead.
I could maybe mix it up and throw new stuff in there. But.
So,
at least for the grandkids.
Well, and all of this
playing for the grandkids. Yeah.
All of this is in reference to a little one-off that we played when Nicole was in town.
Yeah.
Yes.
She was coming into town for my wedding, actually. And you know what's more important than a wedding? Obviously, D&D.
Getting in a session or two.
So we still managed to play the entire time.
Yeah, you got 2 sessions in.
Yeah.
Even though it was like a 4 or 5 session dungeon, but you know,
really
I was like, you see that door there. It's a secret door that suddenly exists.
Yeah. And that was
like,
the...
And there's the big bad behind it. All right, let's get, you know.
Well, and at that point, we'd already been creating our characters for the current campaign, and so Nicole knew that you two were going to play gnomes, and that's what gave her the idea.
Oh, I played a gnome.
Okay.
And she played a gnome in that little...
I don't remember if that was
leak.
The way it worked, but...
It was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I did really like that character that I played in there.
You were an inquisitor.
Yeah,
right?
And you know, because it was just like, reading an inquisitor,
reading
the inquisitor was just like, what is this weird thing? You know, I was like, is this actually going to be interesting? I had to play it, and it was a great opportunity to play it.
Yeah.
And man, an inquisitor is actually really fun to play.
Yeah, it's that dual pull between developing a character over weeks and going, what's this one like? And, you know, looking at a new shiny for a little while.
I'm not going to lie, though, I still don't really know what an inquisitor is.
It's a version of a cleric, I believe.
Right? There's some
kinda
spells?
They're kind of like
roguey.
It's like the cleric cops.
Roguey.
So he's more like a. I almost feel like he's a cleric spy almost.
Okay.
He's the kind of guy who's going to go in and find the deep information that's, you know, like go in and find who is the leader of some opposing cleric.
The Lord Nibar.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Don't they actually have stuff like that in the Catholic Church?
Yeah.
The Spanish Inquisition.
No, it expects the Nicol Inquisition.
I think they do. So
his chief element is rolling 20s.
But I think one of the really fun things about it was is that there was the monster knowledge thing, and just having that additional
metagame
ability, it helped me to metagame the monsters.
Yeah.
And have a good,
well, at least it excused it.
Yeah,
you rolled well enough that, you know, but still at times I remember when we were playing through it, you honestly had no idea what this thing was.
Yeah.
That was trying to kill us. So you rolled it, and that based on the roll, I said, okay, here's a little snippet.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it was. Yeah. Some rock to his paper. Or paper to his
right. Yeah, I know. That was fun. Yeah.
An interesting side note, Nicole and I were in the car the other day, and they were talking on the radio about some kind of cleric, like in a news story. And Nikki goes, wait. And then she like stops and she goes, I was about to say, wait, clerics exist in real life?
Well, no one uses that term.
Right. Yeah. On 42nd and Lindale, a wizard was spotted.
What was he doing?
Casting levitation on his cocktail. Lord 11. So anyway, the cast is assembled. And we had another rather unique experience. I mean, I was telling you a little bit about it before recording. Mm-hmm. But at least from my point of view, things were a little unconventional right off the bat. Because it was like 5:20, 5:30, and I'm rolling up to my house. A little later than I'd like to, but, you know, got...
Because we start at 6.
Right, because we usually start at 6. So I'm rolling up to get things started up, get the coffee brewing, get the ice maker going, get all the little hosty duties that you need.
Because Jake hosts every week.
And, yeah, it's right here at the basement that we are now recording in. Because we don't all fit in my room. But I roll up and I notice that everyone's already here. All the cars of the people are all parked in the front. When does that happen? We're all here before 6? Sweet. So I roll in and I start getting out the snacks and whatnot, and I hear talking coming down in the basement, and I peek down and everyone's already playing. And I'm like, did I miss the memo? What's going on? But
you check your watch.
Yeah, sure, I'm like, checking my phone and what's going on, but Wolfie had communicated with you guys, as I later found out, because as we ended the last session, it was Tobias and Boddington, Schlegel and myself, watching Violet turn to goo and disappear wherever she went.
And that was it. And then Tobias looks at Boddington and says, well, I guess that's it. It's you and me, buddy.
Yep. But I want my Magnus. But Wolfie decided to, at least my assumption was, that he thought, okay, this is a good opportunity to have a head start on what I have to do. So what I gathered was the plan, or at least what I saw you guys doing, is that Schlegel was helping out Nicole finish up her character.
Auditing,
yes. Because, I mean,
which he was informed was not a nice term to use.
Yeah.
Yes, well, so it was actually Wolfgang who used that term, I think.
Yeah,
I said, I don't need it audited. I did fine.
Well, none of us.
Pouty. I did audit it.
Yeah.
And I also did a little, of course, kind of took some things, did some
mechanical inspiration.
I didn't get very far, but.
What were you looking for, like in the sense of min-maxing?
Oh, I guess.
You assume, my friend.
Giving her a heavy cross.
Some of it didn't really work out, to tell you the truth. And some of the suggestions weren't taken, so I didn't exactly min-max it. But just a few concerns about the animal companion, I just didn't think was appropriate, and I think that she could have done better with a weapon or change or two. So
I still kept the greatsword.
Yeah, that's good.
Did you take any of the ideas?
Or I did.
Sagely advice?
You changed your animal.
I changed my animal.
You were originally going to have a fox, right?
Yes. Now I have an owl.
I have
an awesome owl.
But it wasn't.
It was like as big as you.
Yeah. But it wasn't. That wasn't Steve's suggestion,
well,
was it?
It suggested I not have the fox.
Okay.
So
actually,
I
believe the words were, I can't let you do that.
I can't let you. That's, that is what I said.
What, what was wrong with the fox?
Fox is a tiny creature.
Rather than small.
And that is not acceptable, because a tiny creature does not threaten squares.
But maybe it could fit my pocket.
Does not, well... So
much
so
like much like Manchester. Manchester's tiny.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so...
A tumor.
The only way he's effective is to breathe fire.
That Manchester's badass.
Yeah.
Yep, an animal companion can help you to fight, but if it can't flank and it doesn't threaten squares,
right,
you're losing a lot.
No.
So that was my main concern.
So instead of giving Manchester a new fuzzy fox friend,
he
instead
has an owl
that's looking at him with that, you look kind of tasty.
Well,
What did Boddington ask? Like, ask my owl. His what name do you like George.
To, yeah, George.
What do you like to eat? Weasels.
What's your second favorite food?
More weasels.
More yeah. weasels. Smaller weasels.
Squirrels.
Is there anything I can offer you?
These are like things.
Yeah. Of like, see this thing? That's coming out of my shoulder. That's me.
I think you convinced him it wasn't a weasel. And I'm like, okay.
Nice.
So then at the same time.
Yeah, while these two are, well, Steve and Nicole are.
Min-maxing.
Min-maxing. Nicole had, or Megan had missed.
Already.
The last priority. Well, you're both sitting right in front of me.
Baker 1, Baker 2.
Baker 2. 1, which one are you?
You were getting catched
up. I'm younger.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I came first. 1.
But you were getting your adventure on regarding the session before last where you had ran off with that unsavory were-at guy and called back to Boddington. Hey, I'll be right back. Yeah. So when I came down, you were in the middle of like a bar fight. So I don't even know what went on there. I don't know if we wanted to start there because
we could start there and then jump to the different stories.
Yeah, because that's kind of what we ended up doing is that we each had our positions. Tobias and Boddington still down in the dungeon. Violet, who knows where, and Magnus doing her thing off with the were-rats and
or
then
his
I know. But and then of course you got to get Taro in there, this little halfling ranger that has issues.
I think the unconventional thing about that start was just like it was like, okay, we're gonna play you. Okay, no wait, you're done. You can go have a break.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna move to you. Okay, you're done. Now move to you. And then all of a sudden it was at that point where it was just like, then we're all together.
Yeah. And when there was a little lull, like at a point where we were looking up something or looking up spells, deciding what spells for a new day, he would then take that little window and say, okay, you need time? We're going to jump over, change the channel. But you started with Wolfie, with Magnus.
So what happened to me, or Magnus, I should say.
You went running off down the alleyway, not something about
that. Magnus got charmed at the end of 2 weeks ago.
When we were fighting them in our house.
Yes, as I was gone. For 1 week. So Wolfie used his creativity to railroad me, as he said, but made sure that I got that moment in where Magnus could yell back to Boddington, I'll be right back.
Right.
Because that's what Magnus would do. And so it picked up where I'm charmed. I think this were-rat who turned into a human after we got a couple blocks away is my best buddy. And we go to a bar and we're talking and he keeps bringing up the Jade Globe or the Job, as we called it, and asking me where it is. And Magnus, still being Magnus, is saying, you know, kind of jolly, sarcastic things like, oh yeah, it's right in my pocket. I brought it with me.
That's right. And I am happy to see you.
And still being evasive enough that he's not really telling him anything too specific about it. At one point, Magnus was wounded when he first got there, and I think he was, you know, not terribly wounded, but not great from the fight we just had. And
right.
He was like, hey, buddy, do you have anything that could help me out? And this were-rat says, oh, yeah, I have this bandage of bless, but, or not.
Blessed bandage?
Blessed bandage, whatever.
Tomato, tomato.
And he says, I'll give it to you if you give me the Job. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. And I take out a heal potion and take it. because as much as this guy is his friend, Wolfie explained it as the charm spell doesn't make Magnus forget that Violet and Boddington and Tobias are his friends.
Right. Like, you don't become like a puppet. You still have free will.
Yeah. And so he's being nice and joking with this guy, but not really telling him anything. And the conversation went on and his friend showed up. And then...
Are they human in appearance?
Human in appearance. Yep. At this point. And we're in a bar and there's maybe, I would say, 4 or 5 other people.
Random patrons.
Random patrons, or so I thought.
Yes.
In this bar. And...
Snidely looking over their shoulders every so often, maybe.
Yeah, Magnus must have had an exceptional perception roll because he noticed someone sneaking down the stairs. Wolfie actually gave me a surprise round.
Nice.
In doing it. Magnus, instead of being, I'm going to fight and cut off the guy's head who's right next to me, conveniently had his axe out because the guy was asking about it. And so I'm showing him my axe and he says, oh, can I hold it? And I'm like, nice try, buddy. And right then was when I noticed the other human / were-rat, whatever, walking down the stairs. And he gave me a surprise round. And instead of doing anything aggressive, Magnus just says, well, I'm going to go to the restroom, and starts walking towards the door. And that wasn't enough time, obviously, to get down from my stool and walk across the entire bar and open the door and leave. So the person creeping down the stairs shot a crossbow at me, and
They were coming from upstairs.
From upstairs,
down.
Right. In the bar, down, and big fight ensued.
Before you got to relieve your quarter orcish bladder,
right? Corkish.
The corkish.
And then
I think that's
you
when
I
finally sat down, and yeah, there was all I remember is that by the time I sat down and was watching, like you were walking out of the bar, and there's a big crowd out in front.
Well, yeah,
and
so
you were all bloodied, but.
So,
badass.
I mean, Magnus, who has pretty good hit points, I mean, obviously he's a fighter.
You were surrounded by were-rats.
By were-rats. And I don't have any silver weapons, which metagame, obviously silver weapons do more damage to were-rats.
Slow you down a little.
Don't have a damage reduction, which I didn't really know at the point, which is kind of nice of being a relatively new player and never having been a DM, is that I don't know much about the monsters unless they're monsters that we fought.
Right. It's harder to metagame if you don't know as much.
A couple of questions. Were you in the outer ring?
I was in Seaside. Which,
Seaside. So you were completely out.
I was
okay.
completely like in the
yeah,
slum.
Yeah, and that's a really chaotic slum area. So yeah, you could
when
be pulling
was,
weapons and slaughter
and I was doing
and stuff.
Things like flipping around a gold piece and buying everyone in the bar drinks.
Right.
And
because
that's just Magnus' style.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so I think I was fighting 6 or 7 were-rats at the time.
Did this break your charm?
I actually broke my charm right before this happened. So Wolfgang explained it as, you know, the charm was going to last, I think, 3 hours or something like that.
Right.
It probably isn't an hour per level. I don't really know.
I think so, yeah.
Assuming it's an hour per level, it's about 3 hours that this was going to last. And they didn't realize that it had stopped, but I did. You know, he explained it as, you remember everything that happened. So I was casually still pretending to be buddy buddies with these were-rats while realizing, oh shit, what am I doing?
And you try to go to the bathroom.
I tried to go to the bathroom.
That's pretty sly.
Yeah.
That is.
Well, and, you know, not to say, oh, we talked about this too much, but one of the things that Boddington in his alchemy creations gives to Magnus is alter self potions.
Oh, and you had some of those on you.
I did. Nice. And so my intention at that point was actually thinking about it as Magnus could potentially go to the bathroom, take an alter self potion, walk out as a unknown
Another
human slash,
Joe.
Or at this point it was a were-rat because when we had discussed this, I didn't know these were going to turn back into humans, and pretending to be a were-rat for a while.
Nice.
And like getting into the secret underbelly of the city.
Right. Doing a little infiltrating spy stuff.
So Magnus killed them because that's what Magnus does. I think a couple of them got away. The guy with the crossbow who could not hit me but apparently had poison on his... I think he got hit once, but, you know, poisons with a fighter are pretty, not, I shouldn't say easy, but...
Fighters have good fortitude saves.
Good fortitude saves. It's your best save that you have. You give me a reflex save or a will save, and I suck at it.
Yeah.
But a fortitude save, they're pretty easy. So he had poison tip arrows. And anyway, yeah, as Jake was saying, when you showed up, that I, you know, walked out of the bar, eventually got away. At this point, having 4 hit points.
Nice.
Oh, goodness.
Wow.
And I remember I was sitting here kind of listening as I was helping, working with Nicole, and you walked out very proud with your chest out and, you know, bloodied, but you were like, yeah. And the crowd's like, whoa. You know, they're like, this is a tough guy.
Because the word's probably going out, like, before you stepped out, like, there's a half-orc or a quarter-orc in there, and he's going to get mugged by were-rats.
Well, there's a bartender that went to a back room and rang a bell.
Okay.
So everyone knew.
Okay.
And so when I, you know, Magnus walks out, and there's this big crowd of people, and Wolfgang said there was one of the guards was there, and he was kind of letting it happen.
Right.
Because, you know, we're in the...
Taking bets.
Kind of slum area, and he's probably getting paid off, okay. And... Magnus walks out and he's, you know, nodding at people and saying hello and being Magnus, and then gets around the corner and slumps down. And just like, oh my God, what did
Takes
I just do?
Takes a heal potion and it's just about dead.
So then Magnus is sitting outside of the alley and resting, and a woman walks down, greets him, and she says her name is Francesca. And Francesca is someone that Lindora had talked to us about when we were looking at hiding the Job. Francesca is someone who can make things appear and reappear and disappear and all
Hocus
that
pocus.
Stuff. Yeah. You know, she was really nice, and Magnus kind of did a couple sense motives on her, and as far as he knew, she was great and just wanted to help him, and she said, I'll help you if you help me. So she gave him some healing wine, I believe. A little concoction, I'm sure, of Wolfie's. I don't remember what it did, but I know it was pretty much enough to bring him back up.
Nice.
and led me around this secret turn right, now turn left, now turn right, now turn left to kind of lose my way, and brought me to the something sea market, Silverfish Market.
Silverfish.
Oh, you were in the Silverfish Market.
Yeah.
Did so you go, were you down?
Down. Took me down to down the underground. Walked through the market. You know, before we went in, I said, well, what is this favor? And she said, just don't talk about the favor until we're in a good spot. Walked me through this market and eventually brought me back to her booth, noting that basically everything in this market is, hi, we're selling a cute little doll or some string or things that are of almost no value. Knowing that if you're buying a doll, there's probably a poison-tipped arrow in the doll. So it's all kind of
black market
under the table stuff.
Nice.
And brought me back and said, you know, these people are basically going to keep coming after you. These were-rats that are breaking into your house, destroying your townhouse, trying to find the job. I mean, they're not going to leave you alone. And the only way to get rid of them is to kill Rasputin. And Rasputin is this boss of some kind of thieves guild. And he deals mostly underground in kind of this in-between, you know, the world that we live in and the Underdark. There's this dungeon system because the city has been built upon city upon city upon city. And there's just under tunnels and it's never been fully mapped out. And there's no way. But if you go down there, you'll find him and then you can kill him. And hey, conveniently, I bet you'll run into Boddington and Tobias down there.
You never know. This is a good adventure hook to take tonight.
And, you know, I asked her, you know, point blank, hey, you be honest with me, I'll be honest with you. So what's in this for you? Why is this a favor to you? And, you know, Rasputin's giving her trouble and she can't make as much money and she just wants him to die, so...
Taking him out of the picture would make her life...
Make her life easier.
Easier, yeah.
So Magnus rests for a day and then heads into the dungeons.
That Tobias and Boddington and Violet went into to look for you.
And that's where I had break time.
To look for Magnus.
Yeah, and...
assuming she was down... He was down there.
And
Francesca was the one who kind of helped us out with directing us there.
You had talked with her one-on-one. Right. That was that one afternoon you got a little wine tipsy talking about Nibar and the Silverfish Market and the layout of things down there, too. So.
Wait, you had met Francesca?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I knew that.
No. So she met up with us prior to going down into the catacombs.
Did she explain the whole Rasputin thing?
No.
We never heard of Rasputin.
No, Violet had a really good, interesting conversation because Violet was looking for information on Nibar.
Oh.
Because Violet wants to eventually be mayor of Gnometown.
Right. Which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Is Francesca the person that Tobias was chasing the week previous?
Yeah. Yep.
She was tailing you for a little bit and then you wanted to give chase and she gave you the slip. And then that's when she met up with Violet soon thereafter. Or at least in our progression of scenes at the table.
Yeah,
I guess I still don't know completely what happened to everyone else that week. So
Violet likes Francesca, though.
Oh, Magnus likes her, too.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's awesome.
I don't trust her.
And that's why you and Tobias get along so well.
Nicole doesn't trust her.
Yeah.
So then Wolfie jumped to Nicole.
Because by this time, character was ready and raring to go.
Yes. Hope.
As Schlegel gives the, for the most part.
Then we realized I forgot gear.
Yeah, but it was time.
Yeah,
it was the curtain time. Was being so drawn.
We didn't get,
It was my turn.
Okay, that's all right.
So where were you coming from?
I was coming from, I'd been on the road, I guess, for like a year or something, traveling, just kind of randomly going from place to place, seeing what's a cool adventure to do.
Are you willing to tell us Taro's story a little bit?
Taro doesn't really have a big story. He was a half to metagame a little bit. He has not super low charisma, but pretty low. He's got a minus modifier on there, so...
Not he's the most likable of halflings.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with being unlikable? People can't like unlikable characters.
Really all it is he has no sense of humor.
Okay.
Which I think is different from normal halflings.
Yeah.
So he just didn't really get along with the people that he lived with, his could've family and the city the that he came from. Then. So he had a friend that was just like, hey, I'm going to go do this cool thing. You know, we're going to go search for this treasure or something. He's like, you want to come? And he's like, okay, you know, why not? And, you know, it's just been...
fashion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just traveling along now. So, and like I said, his favorite enemies are orcs and goblins. So he comes across this little farmstead sort of thing. And there's like goblins attacking the humans. So, you know, immediately, because he doesn't like them. And he had heard... Nope, he hears this after the fight. But okay. He, you know, immediately starts shooting at them. Because, I mean, he's a ranged attacker. Doesn't really go into the fight very much. Just kind of stays back and shoots at things till they're dead.
And what is your weapon, Taro?
It's a light crossbow, a magic light crossbow.
Ah. Gotta make that jump to fifth level here.
Yeah. Which, can I just say, creating a fifth level character is not easy.
Yeah, we've always started at first level. I've never had to assemble something.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, we didn't quite finish. It's
well, there's
you had a lot to do in very little time.
But I think I did pretty well.
I agree.
Overall.
Yeah.
Looking for validation here.
Yeah, it's great.
I think it would be difficult just in that kind of what you've talked about in the past being that what you invest in is what has happened to your character.
Yeah.
So without knowing that and knowing, well, last week, Taro fought a swarm or whatever.
Really didn't like him. So
Taro had to swim. So now this time he levels up, he invests a rank in swimming.
And you're kind of getting to know the world and making decisions on smaller increments as you experience the world. So, yeah.
So as I'm doing it, I had to make generic decisions.
You had to invest like 40 skill points or something, you know, all 50. In one sitting. 50?
50.
Wow, I suppose you are a ranger. Ranges are pretty good at
with a pretty high intelligence.
Yeah.
Do you think it gave you a different perspective on getting your feats? Because I always feel like I have a tough time with, like, planning that out. You know, there's
to have
so
that
much
many feats to choose from.
I think one of the things I've felt as a character with feats and stuff is I don't really go beyond basic feats very often. So while I've played with some of you guys and you go into different books sometimes, I very rarely stray from the core rule book, whichever one we're in.
This is why
I'm so proud. So proud.
Well, and I think that, Nicole, you've got your character has a very specific combat style.
Yes.
Which is very much a ranger type of thing as well, to say that when you're a ranger, you choose your combat style.
Mm-hmm.
So you took that style and you took feats that were very appropriate for that, weapons that were appropriate for it, your stats are lined up for it. It all makes sense.
Yeah. So what I did was base it off a ranger and not off any experience, like knowing what a ranger in general would do.
Mm-hmm.
Like they fight from afar, they're focused on the outside forest kind of stuff, and that's what I focused on.
And his background has been kind of rangery, at least as far as what it seemed to be, like you were just out in the woods, and that's what a ranger likes to do,
just wandering around.
Do rangers get extra feats?
Like fighters?
I know, like, fighters are ridiculous.
Right.
There was a couple extra things in there.
They get like, package direction, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, you can choose
between. The answer is yes. They get some feats.
Thank you. Why do you still
advise it for
yourself? I mean, there are some characters where you talk about, like, you know, I'm constantly looking at feats because I'm playing a fighter right now, and so it's like, what feat am I going to take this level?
Yeah, and when the camera wasn't on Magnus during this last session, you were doing a lot of feat shopping.
Yeah,
to the point where you're like three post-it notes later. So when I get to 17th level, I'm going to have this feat that allows me to melt them with my eyes.
You know? Just hold up my axe and they die.
Yes.
So you said you found some information from the goblins after you...
Well, no. What I did is I went and I started shooting at these goblins and killing them.
Uh-huh. And you were actually... Wolfie had a combat for you there, too, to kind of keep your feet wet.
Yeah,
right?
But you have to tell the main character in the fight.
What?
The Talon.
Well, yeah. No, I was just about to. What actually happened was George ended up going into the fight before me.
Who's George?
George is my owl.
George the owl.
The owl, who is not a fox.
The weasel snacker.
And mind you, she has a picture of an owl with a head that's like three times... It's an actual owl.
It looks photoshopped.
It looks photoshopped.
It's very cute, though.
Yeah. It is cute. Its head is about three times its body.
So
the owl's more sociable than the halfling.
We actually...
That's true.
He is. We screwed up initiative because Taro was supposed to go first, but we accidentally had George go into the fight first.
Okay.
So George flies straight up to a goblin and...
Within what? Flight of like 80 feet or something?
80 feet. He can fly, so you know he was there easy. He can bite or do two talons for an attack, and so he did the talons first, and what, criticaled? Yeah, he criticaled on it.
Critical.
So Wolfgang's like, he pokes a talon right through the eye of the goblin and goes right into his brain.
Stuck on his brain, man. Yeah.
Man, nice work.
And I call that owl awesome. Talented.
Yeah. Did it drop the goblin?
It did. It died.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it was way dazzling.
That's great.
Just picturing an owl swooping in.
Yeah.
Just going... Right into it.
Especially that owl. And we'll put that up on the Facebook photo
talking
archive.
About tiny the owl is a tiny creature. Correct?
It's actually a small creature.
It's a small creature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. It's the same
as the halfling is. So it's like...
I know, because I was like, oh, it goes into a little pocket in my belt. And Steve's like, actually, no.
He's on your head.
It's the same size as you. He's walking next to you.
It really doesn't make sense when you think about it. I know it does make sense, but an owl being the size of a 3-foot tall halfling.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's a big owl.
You're 3 feet tall, right?
But the class of small has a range to an extent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you can be medium and be 4'10", and you can be medium and be 6'10".
So
I don't know if they actually have it laid out, like, what small is this to that. But
there are some things that don't always really make sense, but they're simplified so that you can say things go from small to medium to large, and it's maybe not terribly realistic.
And the labels are there for mechanics, because there are certain mechanics that, as you probably know,
certain benefits small to being small to
medium, or doing things.
As I was saying, a tiny creature isn't as effective because it doesn't threaten squares.
It has to go into the square in order to.
It can't do attacks of opportunity. So, and it can't.
And flank. If you're going to be out there putting yourself at risk as a little mammal, you might as well be able to sneak in a couple hit points if you can.
Well, and I just keep picturing like a 3-foot tall owl.
The fox.
That's so badass.
Yeah.
With a giant head and little fluffy ears.
Well, essentially, how I picture it is like Taro's on the bigger side of small and George is on the littler side. Of small.
And that works out perfectly.
Just picture-wise.
Yeah, exactly.
So he comes in, and then the next, I think we go through, and I'm shooting at goblins. And
right, but rolling dice for the first time in more than a year. Right?
Yes. A year and a half.
Well, we had the 2 weeks.
So how did your bolt shots go? Did he get it? Was it a good fight?
Yeah, it actually did okay, and then I started to kind of stink a little bit and did not drop my crossbow.
Okay, that's good.
Always good.
But then, so a couple of the goblins actually ran away, and George actually got a little bit of damage, quite a bit of damage, I think, so he withdrew from the fight. And I think Wolfie actually said it's one of the first times anyone's withdrawn in this campaign.
He said it was the first time.
He said Violet may have at one point withdrawn.
I think when you had the armful of books in the Wizard's Tower.
Oh, yeah, I split that scene. Yeah.
But I don't know if you actually used withdraw or if you just ran away because you didn't have anything immediately on you at the time. I don't remember. But if ever there was a time that we did
I withdrawn, but all the squares were threatened. Yeah. I couldn't move from one square to the other.
Well, we were in that tiny little room.
It was rather claustrophobic relative to the open forest.
So George was pretty hurt, so he just kind of stayed away. And then a couple of them ran away. One of them grabbed his tail feathers and ran away laughing.
Grabbed George's.
Yeah.
George's tail feathers. Taro has no tail feathers.
That'd be
And so then I guess some of the people came out, like the farmers and stuff that had been in there. Most of them, I think all of them were killed that were outside.
Okay.
But the ones that were inside and some of the women and stuff came out and they were telling me how, you know, there's a bounty on these goblins' heads. They've been kind of going across the river and nobody's really sure how they're getting across the river, whether it's like because they have the lord or whoever it is has guards posted on the bridge and they're not getting across.
No, because you came from
They didn't say
south,
a name.
Didn't you?
I came from the south. Yes.
You really want it to be the...
I do.
It makes... Yeah, Lord Neaver's totally
such a jerk.
Letting these goblins over to just run free.
Well, whatever it is, they're not going across the bridge, so they're not sure how they're happening. They're getting across, so there's a bounty on them. It's like 5 gold per pair of goblin ears that you get. You know, of course, Taro doesn't like goblins, so he's like, all right, I'm going to go kill him. This should be good. I'll kill him.
Yeah. And you get golden ear.
Because another interesting fact about Taro is that he likes money.
Yeah, he likes money.
Which is weird.
It's weird. He doesn't.
It's not that weird to like money.
Yeah, but I mean.
But it's a good combo that you have a certain.
All right, Tobias.
You have a certain affinity for gold.
Yes.
And a certain hatred for his goblins. So this seems like a win-win.
Right. Kill goblins, get money.
Hello.
Yeah.
Double whammy.
Yeah.
But so he goes off, kind of looking for him. He's like, well, first let's. I need these ears. Like, I'm gonna kill these. I want their ears. I want the gold. So he has a little belt pouch with, you know, four sets of goblin ears in there, kind of hanging out a little bit. And so he goes traveling along this road, and there's people there, and people are talking to him and, you know, kind of being like, who's this little funny guy? He's, you know, he's not as colorful as the other ones. And he's just like, I don't get what you're saying.
I don't get it.
So is he like a little scruff dude? I just feel like he's a little scruff dude.
Yeah, he's really buff too. Like,
oh, yeah?
Yeah. Here's my picture.
He's cool looking.
You can put that up on
there, we'll put
too.
That up on the Facebook.
Yeah. The Facebook.
Search RPG Afterglow on Facebook's people.
Ebook of faces.
Click like and see stuff we're talking about. I'll try to upload more stuff.
Yeah. I don't even know how to like something on Facebook.
There's a button.
You click it.
Really?
Yeah. Like. You've already done it, I think.
Oh.
happened. You must have known what you were doing.
Well, I think you sent me an invitation.
Dear God, you're talking like me.
Do I have to like this thing? Is it going to ask me for a password?
How do I log in? Is it going to get my information? What's going to happen?
No, there's a password. Facebook, I'm done.
Facebook is creepy. It's great. Okay, so he's traveling along.
And then like RPG Afterglow on Facebook.
Yeah, and email us as well at rpgafterglow@gmail.com.
Now a word from our sponsor. Brought to you by Bacardi.
My name is Steve. Bacardi, if you hear that, please send us samples.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
It is out on the internet.
We do have an international audience.
Yes. Yes. On the people internet. Everywhere. So he's traveling along. And he sees these two goblins outside a farm. And they're like pretty well-dressed goblins. You know, he's
for
like
a goblin.
And he's like, what the fuck is that? Because actually, Taro swears a lot.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. That's great. And one little fucking side goblin. That I thought was hilarious is that once you got into character, you were like in character. Like even when Wolfie was like, yeah, can I get your, what is it, your perception bonus real quick? And you're like, fucking 8? Just like, you know. No, I'm asking you, Nicole, but you know, you still just had the Taro
and this
mask
being,
on.
Being worth noting that Nicole, my beloved sister, is not a short-answered, rude person.
No,
in any way, shape, or form. She's like, I'm happy and excited.
That's why it struck me so like, whoa, she's not, like, she's staying in it. All right, all right.
What's
she's,
your perception? Fucking 8. my perception is like 11.
Oh, wow.
Or if we're in forest, it's 13.
Oh, nice. Yeah. A little ranger bonus.
Yes, ranger bonus. Do you guys want to know my stealth? Too, right? My stealth is awesome.
Yeah.
It's just like 88.
Yes, 88. Okay, so goblins outside the house, well dressed. He's like, fucking goblins, and goes running after, or going up to him. And at first, like, because George is hurt. So he's like, first looking around, and he's like, George, stay here, and puts him on a branch.
Do you have to handle animal checks for a lot of the things that you tell George to do?
Anything but attack right now. Because right now, all I have is one trick.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Or I can spend, Wolfgang said I can spend time in towns and try and train him for something else.
Mm-hmm. Do they have specific tricks in the book, or is it just kind of whatever you make up?
Whatever I make up.
Yeah, the book does spell out specific tricks for an animal companion.
Didn't see it.
I know this because I played a druid once.
Yeah.
So,
indeed. But in 3.5.
Yep.
No, but it's in there. It's under animal handling, right?
Handle animal.
Handle animal.
Like under the actual skill section.
Mm-hmm. When you
Okay. Because I was looking in the druid section.
But I would imagine if you had another idea and suggested
it. Because that's how they say to play it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it gives examples.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like stay.
Yeah, limited to that.
Run.
So currently, George knows attack.
How frequently do you get, is it just like whenever you invest time into teaching?
Well, I can invest time and when I level up, there's actually a little chart that shows the animals in the druid section, but animal companions.
So every time you level up, George levels up a little bit.
Yes. Little bit.
But yep. Hypothetically, you just got George last level?
Yes.
So like fourth level, if you're a ranger, would be when you get an animal companion?
Yes. I say that with a question mark?
Yes. No, that's right. That's right.
I have it now, so with less than 5.
Yes.
So technically, you're kind of a second level druid when it comes to the animal companion.
Yeah, because as a ranger...
So George is a second level owl.
Yes. Nice.
Sounds fun.
Sounds awesome.
Do you have spells?
I do have spells.
Okay.
Two. That's about how many Violet has to.
No.
Yeah. The sorcerer.
Yeah.
Sorceress.
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 It's a dinosaur. Tyrannosaurus.
So George gets put on a branch, and then I go after these goblins, and the door's locked. And this is when we discover I have no gear.
Oh, yeah.
Because Wolfgang's
here. I'm going to pick the lock, right?
I'm going to pick it. And I, like, roll really well, and he's like, do you have anything to pick it with?
My fingers.
I got a stick. A magic. Come on. And he's like, well, we'll assume you have thieves' tools.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And so then I go in, these goblins are sitting at a table, and I'm like, what are you doing here? And they're like, what are you doing here? And like yelling at me.
And they were in the middle of a game, right? They were playing the game
with playing
the human
some
bones.
Card game with human
like
finger
the dice
bones.
That you had.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Boddington obviously not there, but I'm like, woo! Get those pieces. I'm missing some pieces, but you know.
So, at first, I'm just like, do I kill these things? They're pretty well-dressed, you know? And then I'm like, no, they're fucking goblins.
Yeah, fuck them.
So, I give them a chance, and then they get up, and then I shoot at them, but one of them gets back out the door and then shuts the door. A door behind it, not outside.
Right.
So, in another room.
Well, you killed the first one.
I killed the first one. And so, I look back at George real quick, make sure he's still there. So, I walk in the house, and then I unlock that door, and then he's not in there. where the fucking goblin go?
Well, you did a perception roll. Or yeah. Wolfie potentially did a perception roll for you.
Yes, and I didn't find him in there. So he's like, well, do you check the other room? I checked the other room. He's like, conveniently, there's a big shelf of things, such as...
Rope, grappling hook.
A backpack and a grappling
some
hook.
Twig.
So take the time to get some gear.
That's being adaptable right there.
That's railroading.
Well,
or no, the opposite of railroading.
Yeah.
After I do all this, I think we switched off to someone else for a little bit.
At this point, I think Wolfie changed the channel back to where Tobias and Boddington were just stepping around the puddle of the gibbering mouther grossness.
Yeah.
Try not to get it on their shoes.
Yeah, and it was kind of a funny sort of a metagaming thing, I think.
Right.
Because we were like, well, we should really investigate what happened to Violet.
Like, I almost wanted to go in after her, like, touch the statue too, because we got to go get her back.
But then knowing that right. Mr. Mako was not going to come back in 2 weeks, that there's nothing that we could do that would bring him back now.
Right.
It was just kind of a funny thing to say... Well, that's too bad. Let's continue on.
We can't get Magnus.
Well, did he turn off? Like, I mean, did
shit
he make,
happens.
Did he make all that magic that was going on with the water and everything?
The water and the fire were still going.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought
I think the liquid all went down and was gone.
Oh, the liquid was gone.
But the flames were still going.
The liquid of violet went down and was gone.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting situation to be in where you're like,
you know,
realistically,
what you need to do.
Yeah, if your players were, you know, if you're playing this as your player, would act to be like, oh my gosh, Violet disappeared. We already lost Magnus. We can't lose Violet too. We better go in after her.
Yeah.
But really, Tom has to go work.
Yeah.
And so we all know Tom's going to be gone again this Sunday, even though he's here with us now.
Yes.
So,
well, there is
bye, Violet.
Yeah. And I almost felt like I went along because, that was the metagaming assumption, and you just got to go with the reality of it. But I tried to compensate a little bit with it by, as we were walking further down the passage that this gibbering mouther came from.
gibbering,
gross and slimy.
Icky monster.
And named your cat.
Jittering mound. You would like a jittering mound if it do you guys.
I would not like one in real life. I would definitely keep it in the garage.
I still don't actually know what the gibbering mouther is, but all I hear is just really awful things. So it doesn't sound like it's very pleasant.
Oh, yeah. We can show you a picture later. Right. It's disgusting.
It has a few effects. It's something of a cross between an ooze and an aberration.
It's a big, fleshy, formless... filled with eyes and mouths.
So this is a creation of Wolfie's.
No, it's actually a monster. It's an actual monster out of the...
And it's actually called a gibbering mouther.
Yes.
Gibbering mouther.
Gibbering.
Whatever.
I call it gibbering because one of my kitties is named Gibbers.
It can't be the same.
I love Gibbers and I hate gibbering. But as we're continuing down this passage, I thought I'd compensate a little bit by being like, Tobias, do you think we should have, like, maybe gone after Violet? Like, is she going to be mad? Or maybe she's having a great time because she's in a magical place. Maybe that's it. I'm trying to convince myself.
Or you're like, should we put her in a flask?
Yeah. Maybe we can put her in one of my jars.
Your pickle jars?
Yeah.
Violet would hate you.
I think that there is a certain... something to be said for being... Let's be somewhat efficient so that we can play the game.
Yeah.
Especially when we're in a situation where it's just you and I playing right now, and there's two other players watching us
play. At the table.
Not really playing right now. So it's like... let's just move forward and get together so we can all play
and
together.
And get to the magnetic pull that we're all anticipating, because Magnus is out in a tavern brawl and Taro's out in the forest and we're down here.
With the fucking goblin.
We could have spent a half hour
of
game time just playing around in that room trying to figure things out.
And he seemed to almost, Wolfie suggested, like, oh, I'm surprised you guys didn't spend more time in there. And they're like, well, we're not assholes, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is the point. Yeah, we all know what's going to happen.
We get it.
Violet's not going to be back next week.
The encounter did its purpose after that. It's like, it's time.
There's a balance in any role-playing that you do is, like, don't want a metagame. You want to play your players how they would act, but you don't want to waste an hour wandering around a room when you know you're supposed to go meet up with these other players
My character would do this.
You're ignoring that sense of pacing at the actual table.
Maybe what you can do is say something like, my character wants to spend 2 hours messing around in this room, but let's just skip that for the sake of time.
Unless something happens, but yeah.
Well, you can even say that you did. You spent 25 minutes.
We knocked our heads.
You found nothing.
Right. Yeah. When we're camping for the night, we don't spend the 8 hours of conversation we might have around the fire. We do it in a nutshell.
You're not leaving.
Unless it's pertinent.
You're not playing in real time.
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
We go through a month in 20 minutes.
But it could take 30 minutes of real time gameplay to investigate a room and ask questions and da 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 da.
Or it could take an hour of gameplay to play
through
a 3 minute fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It works both ways.
You know, it is both ways.
Yeah.
Eventually, you guys were nice enough to not spend 2 hours looking through the room. And ta-da!
So we continued down the path and eventually...
got to a point where we thought it might be worth resting. Because in that gentle yet encouraging way that Wolfie likes to go, I'm not going to say you guys should rest. But as you're going down this passage, you find nice little 10-foot square alcoves that...
What are you trying to say?
What he said was, you will get fatigue bonuses if you don't rest. You have to rest.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're in a cave area. You don't have a sense of where the sun is in the sky, but time still passes.
Yeah.
And
it's the end of the day.
Yeah. Nicole, did Taro also rest in the area?
No, I think it was a different passage of time.
Okay, because I had a day where I obviously went and I rested in the Silverfish Market. I hope it's called the Silverfish
Market. I think what would be happening is like my character would have been doing the stuff while you guys were resting.
Yeah, if we were to add it into a movie.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened. We rested when it came time for us to then pick our spells because we both have to make those decisions. And we're kind of looking through and taking a couple minutes. Then Wolfie jumped back to you. And that's where I think he had the little house scene with those well-dressed goblins.
No, I've done that first.
He jumped back to me, actually.
Oh, jumped back to you.
Yeah, we did the rest of the market, had my little cutscene with Francesca.
Right. But then Tobias kind of woke up a little pale, looked a little like he was suffering from the cold sweats.
Something ate you.
Clammy.
Yes, because I had been bitten by a rat swarm.
Oh,
not a were-rat.
Right.
Woke up with a filth fever.
Yes.
Which took away many points of dexterity.
Three of them.
And a point of constitution.
Did that happen in the dungeon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, what I did then was say, I woke up feeling not too well and I decided to pray for a pretty powerful spell called Remove Disease.
And I made some tea.
you used prestidigitation to make... Tazo sleepy calm tea.
Yeah.
That's Wolfie. Yeah.
I called it prestidigity.
I think what Wolfie did too was like he's just like he wouldn't tell you what you had, but he's like, just so you know, at this point you are still able to pray for your spells for the day. So maybe there's something there.
Right.
Mm. Which I think is not this being my first experience with Wolfie as a DM, I appreciate how much he is, you know, having known Wolfie for 15 years, whatever, however many years I've known him, the man is stubborn. And I think he's doing a really good job of being helpful, but not too helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the sort of thing that your character would know this. As a cleric who prays for their spells, you know that you're feeling bad. And by the way, you haven't prayed for your spells yet today.
Well,
so
he's done,
spelled it out.
And he's done things for me where I took a feat that's called Blood Vengeance.
Oh, yes.
Where if one of my allies falls below 0 hit points and goes unconscious, I can actually go into a slightly less powerful kind of barbarian's rage. Where, you know, it's not a +4, but it's a +2 to my strength and constitution.
So you get that push in your combat.
And when I first took it, I, like, kept forgetting to use it. Because Tobias was Tobiasing every other week.
You took it for granted. Like, oh, it's just...
Well, Tobias will go down. And,
I can't I don't have the motivation.
You're welcome.
And I took it, and then eventually at one point, I think maybe Violet fell. I think it was Violet, and Wolfie did a... Magnus may possibly have a feat that could be beneficial here.
Yeah.
Because he's seen me, like, keep forgetting to use it.
Because that's part of the incentive from my limited experience being the DM, that you want to see your players do their cool shit. It's not only good to okay things with your DM to say, hey, is this all right with you? Is this spell, you know, are you reading this spell the same way I am? But at least for me, it's kind of like, oh, that's pretty sweet. How can I let them use that at some point?
And sometimes it's just
there's so much in there, it's just, you forget. Right. You're like, oh, yeah, I could have done that. Yeah. Or, oh, yeah, I had a +4 to that attack roll.
Yeah.
I hit?
Yeah, back then. But yeah, especially when you're jumping in with a 5th level character, you don't get to learn each level for 2-3 weeks at a time.
Yeah. But I think he's done a really great job of that in helping people.
Keeping it clear.
Well, anyway, when I read Remove Disease, I learned that, and maybe it's a little bit different from 3.5. I didn't know that as well. But in Pathfinder, there's a chance that you're not successful.
Yeah.
So I memorized it twice. It's a 3rd level spell.
Okay.
And I got my spells back, and the first one failed. And then the second one made it.
Yeah.
Ooh. So it's like, oof. Well, okay,
Wolfie was saying you were Colin or Creo or something during your prayer. That's how you justified it.
Mispronounced Creo.
Yeah. During your first incantation.
Creature.
Yeah. Creole mustard mix.
Well, I can kind of see Tobias the first one just complaining about it, first of all. This is stupid. It's your fault that this happened. So then, okay, let me rephrase this.
You're not a jerk.
I'm very grateful. Maybe I'm a jerk. Yeah. You're smart. I'm dumb.
So you kind of were able to shake that off and get the color back in your cheeks.
At the cost of 2 3-level spells.
Right. But you don't have -3 to dex and -1 to your constitution.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Getting rid of disease is worth 2 3-level spells.
I was messed up.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with disease, but I imagine there's continuing effects from it.
Yeah, maybe. Well, like this one only took effect much after the combat, so who knows? Maybe the next day it gets even worse.
Could have been worse, yeah.
But 3 dexterity is not cool.
Yeah.
No.
And Tobias let me lead. I got to lead the party. Up 2.
It seemed to make a little bit more sense because you throwing a bomb over the top of my head didn't feel...
Yeah, I was thinking tactics. I was thinking flattery. Like, maybe Tobias is finally liking me because there's no one else to like.
What were we watching? Oh, we were watching Game of Thrones yesterday, and there was...
Tobias is in Game of Thrones?
Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Game of Thrones...
Turn down the volume for the next 30 seconds.
But at the very end of one of the fights, they use alchemy fire.
And nice.
It goes out, wildfire. Yeah, it's called wildfire. And it goes out, they're like draining it into the water, and then they throw fire on it to set it off, and it like
shoot a flaming
explodes
arrow.
Oh, all these ships. And I'm just like, I look at Megan, I'm like, is that what Boddington's bombs do?
Tip of the iceberg, baby. Tip of the iceberg.
I'm like, yes, just only in 10 feet squares.
Yeah. 3 of which I can choose to not burn.
Yeah.
It's great. So I'm leading the party in my rickety, squeaky wagon. Squeak, squeak, squeak. And I'm feeling upbeat now, even though our numbers are dwindling and who knows what's around the corner, especially after what was around the last corner. But I'm feeling good, and so I'm singing a little upbeat tune, and Wolfie's making note of what penalties I have to stealth at the time.
-40.
You know, gonna find Magnus. Here we go. Tobias is with me. Yeah. You know, having a great time.
I love that song.
And Tobias is like, shut up.
Don't you know?
Tobias is saying shut up, of course.
And he's like yelling it. So then Tobias Wolfie's
is
just
being
like,
great.
Writing stuff down.
But then we heard
everyone.
Certain murmur. And then Wolfie pulls back, yes, and
but
you hear a murmur.
First, no,
to
I'm not down there yet.
Oh, you're not down there yet.
Yeah.
That's right, you're still up.
So, like,
so then it did cut back.
It cut back for a second, cut up to me.
Well, we were looking for our spells, probably.
Yeah, I think that's when you were doing spells and stuff, but he kind of guides me back into the other room of this little farmhouse, and it's just like, roll another perception check.
You think you should look in this room again.
Yes. Well, because I think what it was is he must have rolled like a 2
or something for me.
Because I have an awesome bonus for it, you know, 11.
And I think this is a circumstance where people could see this as, you're just railroading your character. But if this was a one-on-one session, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it's justified because we're all aware of this. We're getting to this point.
Yeah.
So, sure, if you wanted to be your character, you might get bored and frustrated and go off into the woods and be there for another 4 months.
But I think, partially, too, like, this would be my character. He hates goblins.
Yeah.
He's like, where did this fucking goblin go?
Yeah.
And so he goes back to search again.
He's still breathing.
He's like,
that disturbs me.
I want his fucking ears.
Well, you know, just thinking like a DM, if I was in a situation where you failed that and you were there and I knew you had to get through it, probably what I would do is the second time you came through, maybe you fell through the trap door, you know, you found it, but you know, you get a little damage, but it's like you will be able to find your way to where you need to get to.
Yeah. So I find this trap door underneath like a table or something. And so I look down it and I'm about to go down it. I look back at George. I'm like, he's good. I'm like, I'll come back.
And he's looking back at his butt and kind of frowning because he's missing a tail feather.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, me being the sister that I am is like, are you sure you don't want to go get George?
And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. I don't want to get him. He's fine. He's on the tree branch. She's good.
Keep it with the jerk character. Yeah.
And then Wealthy jumps in.
He's like, you look down there and it kind of goes off winding and it looks like it's pretty far. He's like,
and you might be down there for a while.
Without your owl. Choose to not bring him with you.
Okay. And I back out of the room and I actually lock the door again. And then go get
why
George.
Why did you lock the door?
Because I don't want the goblin to get out.
Oh, good call.
Even though he probably has a key. Didn't think that.
It fooled Tobias back in the at our place.
A question about your familiar.
Yes.
Not your familiar.
Companion.
Companion. Does your companion have a certain range that they have to stay within?
No.
They can go. Okay.
No, so it's just an animal.
Okay. Yeah,
so you can be like, see you later, George. And he
be like, stay here, George. If I know the trick, stay. So I went back and got him. And then we go back down. And then we're doing the whole wandering through the
tunnels
thing.
The door again.
First. Well, yes, I unlocked the door. Which, of course, I got it.
With your newly acquired lockpicking set.
Yes. My thieves' tools.
So then that's what brought
you. And then
you.
We're all at this point where all of a sudden we start to hear something.
We're hearing a murmur. The camera pulls back and, Wolfie points to each one of our separate stories. You hear a murmur. You hear a murmur that's very much like the murmur they're hearing.
You hear a murmur and it sounds like goblins. Didn't you say it sounds like,
goblins and other stuff.
Goblins and things.
At least just classic.
I found the tail feather.
Yes.
You found the tail feather. Yeah.
So you're on the trail of.
I'm like, oh, it's those ones.
I'm getting a murmur.
Well, not even just like. Like, it's the goblin. You're looking for a goblin, but it's the goblin from far earlier in the day that
hurt my owl.
That hurt your owl.
That you have a vendetta to fulfill.
Mm-hmm. I want their ears.
What?
Is the time good on it?
The time is the time.
Time's always good.
No, I mean,
you don't run out of space.
Oh, no, yeah.
Are you out of tape?
Hold on a sec. We have to flip the tape over here. Well,
on the first time, you were looking really tough.
Okay, flip it to side B.
Yeah, flip the tape.
Flip it to side B, and we're okay.
Right. Get the pencil and roll in.
Get another hour.